Let's get started, folks. Welcome back, everyone, and thank you very much for joining this session. And I understand that today is fourth day, 4 p.m. before the closing party. So thank you for joining this session, for hearing us for the MSIT deployment story. Before we get started, I want to introduce my co-speaker as well as myself. I'm Sitanshu Verma. I'm a lead operations engineer at Microsoft, and primarily responsible for configuration manager architecture and operations work for Microsoft IT. Today I'm going to talk about the hierarchy architecture, what we have deployed at Microsoft IT, as well as also talk about the client migration. Along with me, my co-speakers, who are the application management expert and security and compliance expert, I would like to introduce themselves.
Hello folks, my name is Dharmendra. I'm service engineer at Microsoft. Today I'm here to discuss about application catalog and the role-based administration.
Hi everyone, I'm Karthik Jaivel. I'm a service engineer in Microsoft IT, and I'm going to talk about security and mobile device management.
Thank you, Karthik. And some of you are wondering that why this picture is there. So one of the folks have made a joke that is this ad for the Lion King or the Colgate ad? No, it was just happened like last year in MMS 2011. We both were in the Lion King store and this picture was clicked, and we all three are speaker this year on for this. So just having that picture for fun. Let's have a, what is the core agenda for this next 60 minutes? So we have a load of information to share with you. So what we have in focus for this session is to share the deployment real world experience from Microsoft IT, since we are already deployed Configuration Manager 2012 and all our infrastructure is running 2012 along with all the clients upgraded to 2012 for 280,000 desktops. So we have a real world experience, and what we are not going to talk about in this session is especially about the product features. You probably have heard hundreds of times so far. So we are not going to talk about the features. We're going to talk about what we learned, what we want to tell you in advance when you are going to plan, be aware of those facts and be accurate planning. So these are the benefits and lessons learned focus on it. And what I appreciate from all of you, if you have any question, please hold on till end of this session. That will allow us to finish the session on time, and we have dedicated time, 10 to 15 minutes, for answering your question. So also, we are not going to go party until we answer your question. So we promise you that we answer all the questions. At the same time, if you are using Twitter, you can also hashtag the session code, which is B3T0, which is ballroom 320. You can tweet that, and we will monitor that question, and we'll answer that on the Twitter as well. So feel free to answer any way you want to. One other thing I heard that when I talk to customers or anyone from the field, that, hey, Microsoft IT is unique. You guys are managing 280,000 desktops environment. Our is like 10,000 or 15,000. So what I wanted to tell in our client management environment is not only we are managing Microsoft IT, which is a large environment, we also have our team experience in managing the small and medium environment as well. So you can see the number two and number three, which are the external customer configuration manager environment, and our team is managing those configuration manager environment. So basically, in that environment, we are also having a different challenges than Microsoft IT, so we have overall experience that what we are primarily managing. And recently, the Microsoft store has the retail store, so we also have managing the point of sales devices using Configuration Manager. So the main purpose to tell you that, hey, whatever the experience we are talking here is coming from different perspective, it's just not Microsoft IT. One of the things that what we usually set the level that what features we are using at Configuration Manager, so you can see on the, we have categorized the feature uses in two different categories. One is called, we refer as internally as full service. A full service is basically all the desktop receive all the services on the left-hand side, basically patch management, software distribution, asset management, and so on. Over the time, we have developed the service called limited services. This was a kind of a business oriented at Microsoft unique, where some of the, as you know, that Microsoft IT is a lot of managing the developer and tester environment, like Windows group or Office group. These are the machines which they are testing the latest and newest version of the technology. At the same time, they do not want any deployment or software distribution happening which will interrupt their day-to-day business. So they only opted in for patch management, which is an integral part of the security. So they only get the definition update or patching, and that's why we call limited services. The reason I'm talking about the limited services here more, because as we move on the different architecture, we'll talk about that, how we use the latest and new feature of Configuration Manager in 2012, as well as Dharmendra will talk about the RBS. So just to do the level set there. To keep the focus on the topics which we have real-world experience, and as I mentioned in the agenda, we are only going to talk about what we have deployed. The things we have not deployed internally at Microsoft, we will happy to answer this question, but it will not be coming from our real-world experience, because these are the features we have not deployed at Microsoft due to other business reasons, because they already have other options or they have not are critical for Microsoft IT environment. But we would love to answer the question, but just to give you an idea that these features we have not been using at Microsoft. So let's look to the first topic of this session about the hierarchy architecture, hardware, and client migrations, which I'm going to cover. And so the first thing I would like to introduce that a lot of folks may not be aware that what is in Microsoft IT, number of PCs, number of users. So I want to give you key facts that why we choose the different options architecture and want to keep you aware so that it will be easy to understand the architecture we have put together. So Microsoft headquarters is in Redmond, U.S., and you can see that we have pretty much close to 500 locations worldwide, which you can call as like sales office, marketing office, or could be a development center at Microsoft. So these offices are connected with the pretty much fast network links. And over the worldwide, we have like 200-plus locations where we have the server, we call as like highly available offices. So those locations are connected with them. Now, looking into the number of employees at Microsoft, we have close to 180,000 employees, which includes the full-time employees as well as the contract staff. So 180,000 close to. Now, looking into the number of PCs we manage using the Configuration Manager 2012 today is 300,000 PCs. Some of you may be wondering that why we have more PCs than number of users. The reason is that there are a lot of users are developer and tester. They have more than one devices. For example, Dharmendra has 5 PCs in his office. So you can imagine that the ratio of PC to is very variant. So that's why 300,000 PC. Now, look into the operating system where distribution. At the desktop side, we have pretty much like 70% close to for Windows 7, all PCs are running. Looking into the how many, lot of users also run Windows 2008 server, which is 30% close to. And we still have like 1% Windows Vista running in our environment. And these are the usually the developer sustained engineering team or the customer support team who are supporting the Windows Vista. So there are small variation of Vista as well. The third thing I will talk about that, what is the difference between the desktops and notebooks? You can see that 63% and 37% ratio for a laptop versus desktop. And with the Configuration Manager 2012, we are now able to report that with the Exchange connector, that how many devices are in our environment for mobile. So there are 125,000 mobile devices, which we are connecting to Exchange server for syncing email, and there are different more details. Karthik will cover that, what we get out of Configuration Manager 2012. So let's move into the architecture. So 2 years back when the Configuration Manager 2012 Beta 1 came, we started looking at how do we design the architecture. So key things, one of the things some of you folks will say that we did not like about it, that it's not an in-place upgrade. My personal preference is that I liked it very much, that it was not in-place upgrade. The reason is that since SMS 2003, means I joined Microsoft in 2004, and that time SMS 2003 was being deployed, and my site code was pretty much same, what 8 years back was there. Means we just did from SMS 2003 to Configuration Manager 2007, means everything same. Means we did not focus on the architecture because our focus was to upgrade the site to the latest and valid version. But looking into the Configuration Manager 2012, it enforced my engineering team, let's do the different way because it's not the same, we do the side-by-side migration. So one of my engineers went ahead and worked with the networking team, worked with the AD team, and redesigned from the scratch. Basically, we found in a lot of ways that there was a locations where we are sending the packages from the longest path, not from the shortest path, because network has been changed, number of users changed. So that's why I just wanted to give you an idea that upgrading is start from the scratch and think that design, how do you get the benefit of side-by-side migration? Don't take it as a negative, take a positive that what you can improve overall. So let's back to the slide where This is our design of 2007 Configuration Manager. So if you see that, it is pretty much straight architecture where you have a central site with remote SQL Server, and you have five primary sites. So if you see from the left to right, the first one is like corporate headquarters, which has a kind of 130,000 clients we were supporting on single primary site. I put a star there because it is unsupported as per product to have more than 100,000 clients, and we were running in Configuration Manager in 2007. So I want to call out that it's not a standard practice to have more than 100,000 clients. On the left, is the second one is North America, then Middle East, Africa, Asia. These are all the sites based on the regionally aligned. So each region has one primary site, and the reason it has because of the network links, how they are connected to headquarters. The last site, which is a limited services, which I just talked before, that we have a requirement that to have patching-only services. And one of the requirements they also had that there should be no accidental deployment to these PCs because it interrupts their test cycles. So that's why we have a dedicated primary site where we have disabled the software distribution agent so that nobody, even the administrator, cannot deploy accident software distribution on this machine. So that led us to have a dedicated primary site. So that was in 2007. So now look into that. What changed in 2012? What we changed in this architecture? So the first change we did, we removed the remote SQL Server for the CAS. The reason we removed the remote SQL Server, because we look into the architecture change, there's no inbox processing happening on the CAS, which is central administration side, because all the primary side is sending the SQL replication data now. And we compared the Configuration Manager 2007 SQL Server processing as well as processing on 2012. We found it was like about 40% reduced processor rate. So we did not feel that we need a dedicated remote SQL Server. However, we are still continuing to monitor and fulfill. But at this moment, we feel very good about that decision that we don't need two servers for the CAS only. So that's why we removed the remote SQL Server, having provider and SQL on the same server. The second change we did, we removed the limited services site completely. The reason is that now you can have a client, a collection-based client agent settings, as well as with the role-based administration, you can pretty much achieve the same goal what we used to do in dedicated primary site. So that we completely eliminated that one limited services site without needing of dedicated SQL Server and other folks. The third change we did, we changed a lot of number of distribution point and secondary site. What changed there? A lot of secondary sites changed to the distribution point, and there are only few secondary sites left. The reason was that there was a network link which are connecting. So that was one reason why we had have a secondary site. So there was number change between DPs and secondary site. So if I look into that overall 2012 architecture, so this is my final Configuration Manager 2012 architecture. So if I start from the left, basically, that one thing you also say that we have five primary sites in Configuration Manager 2007, and you still have a five primary site, even though you have removed the limited services site. Why this number did not change? The reason, as I mentioned, that we were running Configuration Manager for corporate headquarters primary site in an unsupported version, like more than 100,000 clients. We wanted to go supported because of replication and everything. We don't want to take a risk. We have divided the corporate headquarters site into two sites. That's why you see the first site on the Redmond campus site one, second is Redmond campus site two. And it's just to be unsupported because in the headquarters itself, we have 140,000 machines, and that is obviously not supported as well. So that's one reason why we end up with the same number site, but overall, we reduce one primary site. The primary changes I want to call out about I mentioned the CAS SQL Server is not dedicated anymore now. On the same server. We have reduced one primary site, even though overall count remains same. Overall secondary site used to be at 38. We are now with 13 secondary sites. So close to 25 secondary sites has been reduced now with Configuration Manager 2012. Also, we have total 225 distribution points. The other thing I want to call out on the right-hand side, you see on the orange bar that 98% roles are virtualized. So everything you see there in out of 225 or 250 site server roles, only SQL Server, which is CAS and each primary site SQL Server are physical today. So that is the only physical server we have in our architecture, and rest of them are virtualized, and we are pretty much running from quite well. So let's move into the next thing that this is one of the common questions I have heard from. What's your architecture look like in terms of hardware? I mean, what is your processor, memory, and RAM? So this is just put a high-level information here that if you are interested in it, there is no formula we've derived this one. Basically, why you have this much memory, why you have this processor. Based on our real-world experiences, we have always quarterly fine-tuned these values, and we have found that this was working for us for a while, and we want to say that as a sample, you can refer it. If you are interested in more details, like how many spindles you have, how many disks you have for SQL, the blog details I blogged a few weeks ago, so you can refer that blog. It has more details about this, like how many spindles we have, how we have partitioned the drive, and what RAID level we have. Everything is blogged in this link. So just to give you an idea, and again, I will refer the product documentation as a first preference, and these are just a sample, because, and also it depends how many clients you are managing, what features you are using, so make sure that you follow all the guidelines before referring this one. Moving to next. So the other challenge when we are migrating from Configuration Manager 2007 to 2012 was that how do we make sure that we don't run into the issue where we have a service downtime because content is not available. Packages are not available to the client because they are being served from 2007. Now during the migration side by side, how do we make sure that those things? So that was our primary goal from all the service owners that design and architect and deploy in a way that you have a minimum service downtime for the client's package reach in terms. So what we did, we have two strategies we followed. The first strategy we followed that we use the migration features. So I will highly recommend when you are planning for Configuration Manager migration from 2000 to 2012, look at this migration feature, and you can map your 2007 site to 2012 and read it, all the content, and migrate the packages and DP. Convert the distribution point, which is 2007, to 2012. That was we leveraged for making sure that when we do the conversion, there is minimum downtime available for the client to get the packages. Over the time, we also end up with our new distribution points coming, so we ensure that we have used the pre-staging content utility. So basically, that what you do there, you go there and have the all the content compressed, and you use your pre-stage exe and just decompress the packages. So that we use because in that case, as soon as the DP came online, we already run that exe file. It will have the content. Within 10, 15 minutes, we have all the packages available on this location. So these are the two approach we used, and I highly recommend if you have similar situation, use the migration feature or use the pre-staging based on what scenario you are going through. So that helped us in using the service downtime minimum as possible. The last thing I want to talk about, the how we migrated the client. This is something we did unique at Microsoft, and I think that most of you will have the similar situation where you have a Configuration Manager 2007, and you are building the Configuration Manager 2012, and your goal is to make sure that 2012 clients doesn't move back to 2007, or 2007 clients are not talking to 2012, and also you want to make sure that because they are in the same AD site, there could be boundary overlap issues, so make sure that they are assigned to right site. So that's the challenge we had. And how we did it, we have 2007 site, you can see on the screen. We build the 2012 site. For example, we have two primary sites. We started building the CAS. We build one primary site to start with, and another primary site to have a scale once we start moving the client. Today, at 2007, our primary mechanism for client deployment is software update point-based client deployment. Basically, it's a group policy per site, per GPO, or per domain, where it says that set the WSS URL to talk to our sub-based client installation. So automatically, as soon as the machine comes and joins the domain, it automatically scans first time and sees that Configuration Manager client is missing, it automatically assigns. So that's our primary mechanism for client installation in 2007. So what we wanted to do, we created a security group. Let's call SG1 and SG2. And we ensured that this security group is being excluded from Configuration Manager 2007 site assignment group policy, because as I mentioned, we use software update point-based client installation. We want to make sure that no policy, like group policy for site assignment, are being targeted to SG1 and SG2. The third thing we did, we added machines which we are targeting in a phased approach in the security group, SG1. At the same time, for same machines, we created a collection in our Configuration Manager 2007. So we did two steps in the number three. Add the machine in the security group, and also create a collection on Configuration Manager 2007. Once we have done it, the third thing we did was deployment. Now, what is this K-list and why we didn't need a K-list. So as you, if you know that if you join any machine to the security group, in normal scenario, it takes 7 days to machine to recognize the security group, or user should reboot the machine. So either I should wait for 7 days, or I should wait on user to reboot the machine because I joined the security group. So what we did, we used the sys internals utility called K-list and deployed as a on software all the, on all the machines in the security group. It basically immediately recognized the security group. So I don't need to wait a days. It happens immediately as soon as the software distribution runs. As soon as the software distribution ran on those machines, these machines are now part of the security group. And the fifth step we did is a new group policy, which is only targeted to SG1, and it tells that you are assigned to 2012 site code, whatever the site code is, or you will be getting the WSS URL from Config Manager 2012. And since we use software update-based client installation method, automatically client get installed. So basically, we are not doing the client installation. It's automatically being taken care of from the WSS or sub-based client installation. So that's our mechanism from client installation. And once we migrated everything, what we repeated this step by having 1,000 machines added into the security group or 4,000 based on what scale. And once we are done, you can basically retire the 2007 architecture, decommission the 2007, decommission that group policy, and remove the security group. You don't need the security group after deployment. This is one approach we followed, and there could be many others. So just wanted to share what we did. And if you like it, you can use it. And there's a blog link which has more details, what script we use for K-list and how to use that K-list software distribution package. You can refer that blog link on the bottom. With this, I want to invite Dharmendra to talk about application management, how we did application catalog, and role-based administration.
Thank you, Shatanshu. Yeah, we had a lot of theory. Let's go and see some demos about application catalog. How many of you guys have heard about application catalog? Nice. How many of you have seen it in real time? Oh, a lot of people. I'm going to show you the Microsoft IT's application catalog live right now. Let's get on to the demo piece. So this is the Microsoft IT's corporate application catalog. We have over 286 applications here, and this is how the application catalog looks like if you never saw it for the people. You can select the application you want. You can click on install to install the application. If you want to know about the application more, you can click on the application. And it's going to look like this. You get to see the taxonomy of the application. I mean, what does this application mean? You can see what are the keywords. And also, if you want to know more about the application, there's a documentation link. If you click the documentation link, it's going to go to the appropriate page that displays the documentation. So for example, we are looking at the .NET application. And also, you can filter your applications. Hold on. Let me go back to the main page here real quick. While the main page is loading, you can filter your searches based on the category. On the left-hand side, you have the categories. What are the engineering most popular applications at the Microsoft? Or also, you can use a search function on the top. You can say, oh, wrong keyboard. It's going to tell you what all the Office applications are there. The search goes by the name, and it's going to go through the taxonomy. If it matches any keyword, it's going to display you the applications. And also, you have more tabs on the top. You see this application request tab, and you can see a column here, request approval. See, most of our applications doesn't require approval, but you can set the applications to require approval. If the application is marked for approval, instead of seeing the install screen here, you would see the request for approval screen. If you request for an approval, you can go ahead and track your application request. For me, I don't have anything that I scheduled for approval. Otherwise, you can go ahead and track them here. In the same way, you can go to My Devices tab, and you can track what all devices you have. That's our application catalog. Let's see what it took us to have this thing happen, right? We did a lot of stuff, customization in the back end for you guys to see this. So let's look at that. So this is just a recap of what you saw right now. You can search the software in the application catalog. And the other important thing is that application catalog supports localization. It's going to look at your Internet Explorer preferences. and it's going to display the applications in that language, provided when you are creating the applications, you provided the metadata in that format. But out of the box, it is not going to, if you put the information in the English, it's not going to convert it to the German and show it to you. When you're creating the application, you have an option to declare in the German language, this is what I want to see. So you have to make sure that you put all that information in the catalog. And you can install the software from the catalog, you can track the approvals, you can track the history, you can do all those stuff. So let's see what are the requirements we had in the Microsoft IT to make the catalog happen, or what are the challenges we had. Ours is a unique scenario. We had already a self-grown website in the Microsoft before the Configuration Manager 2012 came with the service. We already have a self portal where you can go and install the applications. So we have to provide a service which is better than that in the terms of accessing or accessibility or the performance. So that's one of the requirements we had. We cannot say, hey, this is a new thing, cool thing, but you know the performance is not on the par. So yeah, that's our first requirement, that whatever we provide should be better than what we had homegrown earlier. And also, we want to provide a single access URL for the catalog. Out of the box, the Configuration Manager 2012, the URL link that comes when you install the catalog role is that website/virtual directory. Nobody is going to remember what is the site server name /virtual directory. I mean, it's pretty hard to remember for anybody. So we want to create a friendly name. That's one of the requirements. The other thing is the load balancing. Configuration Manager 2012, out of the box, doesn't have any dynamic load balancing feature. We have 180,000 users, so to improve the user experience, we had to come up with some load balancing technology to enhance the user experience. And also, we want to put all the, we want to load the catalog with the applications. In the catalog, you can put both packages and applications. But if you use the packages, the classic software distribution, you cannot put the icons or you cannot put the application taxonomy. You don't have all those rich features. We want to load our application catalog only with the applications, not with the packages. And also, we had to do it quickly. We were given just like a month time. We did not have like 6 months or a year to convert all the packages into applications and stuff. Now, let's see what is the technology we used to overcome our problems. So Microsoft IT already was using Big IP solution. This is a third-party solution that the Microsoft IT was using already. So we thought we will adopt this solution to do the load balancing story. So we were using the global traffic manager, the location traffic manager, the session persistence features of this technology to solve our load balancing problems. How this thing is helping us, I'll show you exactly in the next slide. But for the time being, just remember these things. And also, we were using the IIS redirection. As I told you earlier, that the out-of-box configuration manager comes with a site server name /virtual directory, which nobody's going to remember. We want to use a friendly name, so we have to use the IIS redirection to do that. And also, we were using the ActiveX Trust so that the low rights users don't hit the permissions issue on the IE. So we are adding our application catalog website as the trusted site for the IE. And because it's a website, we had to monitor the URL to make sure that our service is up and running. So we are using the Operations Manager URL monitoring to do that. And also, we had, as I said, we were given only 1 month time to convert all the applications. So we had to use build up automation using the PowerShell and the .NET commandlets to make sure that we do the whole thing in less than a month. Now let's see how this thing works in reality. So here is a user. He goes to the IE and type application catalog. That's a friendly name that we are using. What happens, it gets converted into the GTM FQDN. This is a simple DNS redirection. And once what you see on the right-hand side is the GTM cloud, Big IP cloud. Not that cloud, but just a GTM cloud. We have three zones. We cut the Microsoft into three zones. We put the North America and Redmond domains in one zone, and Europe is in the second zone, and the Asia Pacific and Australia are in the third zone. And then each zone has the application catalog website nodes. So for example, the zone one has three nodes. Those are nothing but our primary site server codes that you see there. So what happens exactly is that when the user goes and hits the application catalog.contoso.com, he will land in any of the zones. But we have a mapping that's set in the GTM that if the user comes from so-and-so IP subnet, send them to one or other zone. So we already pre-configured that in the GTM, that we track the request from which IP address or which IP subnet you came from, and we make sure that you land up in the appropriate zone. So right now we are in Las Vegas, so it falls in the North America zone. So if you access our application catalog, you end up in zone one. But tomorrow morning, if you fly to Europe and access it, it will automatically know that you're accessing from one of the locations where the IP subnet belongs to the Europe zone, and it will automatically redirect you to the nodes under that zone. That's the GTM feature. And what happens when you reach the zone is that it will direct you to the one of the nodes available in the zone one. Right now in the zone one, we have three zones. That's the LTM, Location Traffic Manager. Right now we set it up in the round robin format to take the load. So any one of them will take it depending upon which is the last one that took it. So for the time being, say that you landed on RD2 node. Once you land on the RD2, we'll lock you there for 15 minutes using the session persistence. We do that because we don't want you to bounce on the load balancer for each transaction you do on the catalog, so that the users will have better user experience because they're talking to the single server for at least 15 minutes. And then what happens when you hit the RD2, the user will get to see the applications that are targeted to him. Once the user clicks the install, then the request gets routed to the MP, the policy gets transferred to the machine, and then the requirement rules are evaluated. One thing to note is that, if you target a system, the policies come to your machine irrespective of whether you want it or not. But when you target the application, the catalog, the policy gets only transferred to your machine only when you click an install. Till that, it's just a website. That's a change from Configuration Manager 2007 to 2012 with respect to the policies that are targeted at the application catalog. Here, it's just a website. Only when you click it, we create the policy and transfer it onto the machine. Anyways, if your machine meets the requirement rules, like in the new application, we have all these requirement rules, detection rules, and if your machine meets all the requirement rules, then the request gets routed to the distribution point, and then the content is deployed to the system. So this is how the application catalog. One thing to note is that all these things are not necessary for everybody to do and to have an application catalog running in their enterprise. We did it because we want to make the accessibility easy for the users. We don't want them to remember what is the site server name and the virtual directory name, or we don't want them to go to the software center and remember where to click the link. And we want to give them the load balancing experience so that the browsing is faster. So that's why we did all this stuff. This is about the application catalog.
So, Dharmendra, I have a question that if someone has if one of the environment is very small and had only one primary site, do you think that what will be the approach will be?
It's not about the one primary site or two primary sites. It's about the number of users you have and the number of the locations you have. I mean, you don't want the user in Japan going over the WAN to somewhere in Europe to browse the website. It's going to be slow. It's going to be very slow. So you want to put an application catalog role in the Japan itself, and you want to use some technology, load balancer technology, or you can create custom client agent settings to force those clients to go to the application node in the Japan rather than going to the Europe. So that's how you need to address it. Does it make sense? So let's see about the RBA. So there is no relationship between the application catalog and the role-based administration. This is a completely different topic because I'm covering two topics. Have you heard about RBA, role-based administration? Okay. How many of you did? Oh, nice. Okay. So this is a new security management feature in the Configuration Manager 2012 to address who should access, how should they access, and the console, and all that stuff. So basically, when you compare it to the Configuration Manager 2007, how do you relate it? In the Configuration Management 2007, we used to have class rights and instance rights. Do you guys remember that? Right. So the security roles are nothing but your class rights. Basically, they are the set of permissions. Who should have read access, whether the user should have the read access, or write access, edit access, or deploy access. That's all the class rights. Are what we call in the Configuration Manager 2012 as roles. The roles are nothing but the set of permissions. Okay, so if you create a role, it's just a bunch of permissions. And then we have another thing called scope. Scope means it's the instance rights. Okay, which set of objects are we talking about? Entire set of objects or subset of objects at the scope is a new terminology. So the new terminologies are the scopes and the roles. So in the end, how it works is that a user has a role, which is nothing but a bunch of permissions, and then his scope is on a set of objects, he's going to use this and deploy it to the set of machines, which is nothing but a collections. That's how this whole relationship works. The other real-time example I can give you is that if you have, apart from the centralized administration, if you have local administrators in Europe and Asia, and you want both of them to deploy applications, but you don't want them to step on each other applications, then what you do is that you give both of them the same role because both of them should have the same permissions, but you create different scopes so that they don't see each other. The European administrators operate in their scope, the Asian administrators operate in their scope, but they're both able to deploy the applications they created. That means they have, and you're going to limit them to their collections. The European administrators are limited to the European collections, and the Asian administrators are limited to Asian collections. So they have the same roles, but their collection level access is different, and their scope is different, so they get to do their own piece. And also the other advantage of the RPA is that it removes the clutter in your console so that, oh, why am I seeing so many objects? So you get to see the objects only that you should really see and then you should have access to. How are we using RPA in the Microsoft? And so earlier, Shivanshi was referring about the full service and the limited service. Now, we were able to achieve the design by using the RPA. So in the limited service, Shivanshi said that those are the bunch of machines that gets only patches. So how does RPA going to help here? So what we did is that for the users that has access to deploy to this limited service machines, what we did is that we removed the software distribution role for them. So basically, even if they have a software distribution role, they would not be able to use the software distribution objects like applications or packages and target to disk collection. They would be able to, that user, if they have a software distribution role, they would be able to target other collections, but not this. The RPA will not let you do that. So that's how we were able to prevent any accidental targeting of software distribution to the limited service machines. And also, in the Configuration Manager 2007 days, we used to have a different hierarchy for our packaging and testing teams to test the applications, because there is no way using the technology we were able to guarantee that they will not deploy anything accidentally to production or delete any production applications. But using the RPA, by creating the different roles and scopes, we're able to prevent them. Right now, they use the same console as the production enterprise administrators use, but the technology prevents them from accidentally deploying anything that's in the testing to the production. I'll show you how does it works. Let's look at a demo here. All right. So if you are a full administrator, this is what you get to see. If you are a full administrator, you have full administrator role, you have access to all the scopes, you have access to all the collections. So this is a deployment. Let's start with the packager, okay? If you're a packager, your security role is application administrator. Basically, you get to create applications, delete applications, modify applications, and your security scope is packaging. And this scope doesn't come out of the box. You can create any name for your scope. So I created packaging. And he can deploy only to test machines. So in that way, even though he can create any applications and stuff in his scope, he can only deploy to the test machines. And the tester has access to all the scopes, packaging scope, testing scopes, and the deployment scopes. I will tell you why we had to give it. And in his security role, he has a tester role. The tester role basically gives you the read access, and also he can change the scopes of the objects. I'll explain you how it fits into this whole design in a while. But he doesn't have access to any collections because he's a tester. He's just testing the applications. He doesn't have to deploy. The deployment admin has application deployment manager role, and that means he gets rights to deploy the objects, but he will not have any access to edit the objects. Why he should edit that object, it's all test signed off already. And he operates in the application deployment scope, and he has access to all the production collections, all systems, all users and stuff. Let's see what happens. Let's start the workflow from the scratch. Let's see what happens if the also let me see what objects we have here. This is software library. See, these are the objects that the packaging team has in their folder. One important thing, the RBA doesn't cover the folders. Folder access you cannot limit using RBA. Anybody can drop the objects into the folders if they have move folders permission. You cannot set the security at the folder level. You can only set the security at the object level. That's an important thing. Anyway, these are the objects in the packaging team has. These are the objects the deployment admin has. These are the objects the testing team has. Right now, this user is able to see all these things because you logged in as a full admin. Now, let me see what happens if you log in as a packager. I already logged in, so that it would be. So if you logged in as a packager, so he can see the objects in the packaging folder, but let's go up. See, he cannot see the objects in the deployment. The deployment folder, for this example, think as that's where the packages are there for production deployment. So he cannot see any objects. So there is no way he can edit the objects in the production. All right. And let's see what he sees in the testing folder. He cannot see anything in the testing folder. So all he gets to see is his own packages, what he is building it. And he gets to edit the applications and stuff. So typically what happens is that when he is ready to, when the packager packages the applications, when he's ready for the tester to test it, what he does is that we can have him move the object to the testing teams. Okay, now the object is in the testing folder, okay? But he can get to see it because he still has a scope. And he sends a ticket to the testing team, hey, the application is ready for testing. Then what the tester does is, this is a tester access. Okay. Now tester can see these objects. Let's refresh this thing. Okay. This object. What tester is going to do is that he's going to set the security scopes. Okay, not this object. I think we moved this object right now. Yeah, he's going to remove the packaging team scope from here. So what tester is doing is that he's removing the access to the packaging team so that they don't edit the object while these guys testing it, because he's testing it on a certain configuration, the packaging team should not edit it. So if you go and see the packaging team right now, earlier they were able to see the object. Now, because you refreshed it, they can't see it because it's been removed from their scope. Okay, so what the tester is going to do here, tester tests the object and say he's okay. Oh, this thing passed the testing. Then what is he going to do is, he's going to go here again, and he's going to add the application deployment scope. Now what happens is, if you go to the deployment admin role, now this is now the deployment admin, he goes here, there is his package. He's able to see it because the tester added the scope. Now he's going to take it, and he's going to deploy it. Only this guy has access to all the collections. That's okay. He's just saying that I don't have any members. Only he gets to deploy it. The packager also has rights to deploy, but he can deploy only to test machines, because earlier I showed you that they have access only to the test machine. So if you say browse, they don't have any access to the user collections. They have access to the only test machines. They can't see any other collections too. It's okay. They don't have any members. So that's how the RBA works. PPT machine, one second. So this is a quick recap of what I just showed you. So the packaging team creates the packages in their scope. The testing team changes the scope of the application and the package if it's ready for production. And then the deployment team is going to deploy to the package. The overall net result is that the packaging team cannot see the packages in the production, so they cannot edit it. The deployment admin has only deploy rights. He doesn't have the edit rights, so he cannot edit the package in the production. So this is a secure way of limiting from nobody is having access to edit the application in the production. If there's any issue with the application in the production, they have to send it back through the scopes in the way it came back. So there's a proper security, so nobody gets to misdeploy anything, and everybody can be in the same console and get to do their roles without the fear of having misdeployment. That's all from role-based administration.
Thanks, Dharmendra. So I'm going to talk about security and mobile device management. When it comes to security, I'm going to talk about patch management. In CMOS, between CMOS Config Managers 2007 and Config Manager 2012, the patch management feature is pretty much similar. So I'm going to talk about what are the features that we leverage most of the time, and then how it benefited us in MSIT. One of the cool features and important features in Config Manager 2012 is automatic deployment rule. And we leveraged the automatic deployment rule for our monthly patching as well as for our definition updates. So we did set this rule only once at the initial time when we started the site and the server components. And then it automatically takes care of downloading the patches and then getting the metadata from Microsoft Update and already deploys this to a dummy collection. And then the admin person does the QC and release it to the production. So how it benefited us, it has totally cut down the time of download time and the admin work time from 5 hours to merely 10 minutes. So now every month we have to just go and do the QC and release it to the production collection. So also we use this primarily for our definition updates installation on the clients, because definition updates are very dynamic. Every day they get released multiple times a day. So ADR will automatically take care of downloading this latest definition updates and make it part of the deployment. This is the screenshot of the ADR and these classification and product we select for definition updates. And the second one is the error description. Month after month, when we do the remediation activities, we take a lot of time to find out what these error codes mean and how they actually get interpreted, and then what are the real description for these errors. So with Config Manager 2012, the error description is already part of the inbuilt reports. So if there is a group policy conflict for WSS URL on the machine side, you will not be just seeing this hexadecimal code. You will be seeing the clear error description, which will show what are these counts and what are these error codes and error description, so that you can take the actions accordingly. This one has cut down our remediation activities to our troubleshooting activities a lot. It's just improved our remediation to a great extent. A third one is the in-console monitoring. You don't have to run multiple reports every month. We generally go to the in-console monitoring and then look at the deployment status and see how many machines are compliant, how many machines are non-compliant, and also how many machines are failing. With the in-console monitoring, we drill down to the machine-level data and then look at the machines and then see why they are failing and then take the actions accordingly. So with that, we could also easily achieve our SLA for patch compliance by looking at the machine-level data. And the next one is the user experience in with the patch management or even with the Config Manager 2012 has improved a lot because with Config Manager 2012, users can define their own non-business servers not to deploy any software updates or any kind of patches during the presentation time or during any critical activities. We have got some good feedback about this in MSIT, and then that's improved the user experience a lot when it comes to patch management. And this is a screenshot of how to set up and where to set the non-business servers in Software Center. And the last but not least, again, Chitanshu and Dharmendra already mentioned about our service boundary. We have a separate service service layer or a service boundary for patch management and software distribution. We achieve this through RBA. And you may be wondering why I'm not talking about SCEP when it comes to security. I have covered this just the session before this session elaborately, and SCEP by itself, it's a big topic, and I have explain clearly how we deployed and how we are maintaining the definition updates. I would strongly suggest you to view that for any kind of a reference for SCEP management in MSIT. Okay, mobile device management. You might have heard about Exchange Server Connector many times. Exchange Server Connector is the another layer, layer of mobile device management, which is a light management of which is called light management. Any device when it uses Exchange Active Sync to connect to Exchange Server for mail access will register some information in Exchange. We tap on the data and then gather minimal information to get the asset inventory of all the mobile devices. How we deployed it, we deployed it through with a read access in my MSIT and then gathered all the mobile devices that are connecting to Exchange Server. This has helped us a lot in finding out the inventory of mobile devices, as well as the mobile trend month after month, and how many machines are actually compliant for policies that are enforced by Exchange. This data is already being collected by Exchange Server Connector. So if a device is not having the PIN number for the security purposes, that machine will become non-compliant and will be shown in the report easily to find out what are the non-compliant devices that are connecting to CorpNet. And the third one is Office 365. During the migration of mailboxes from one on-premise to hosted Exchange servers, we were able to easily track how many devices are getting migrated from on-premise to Office 365 because we collect this data from Exchange Server Connector for inventory purposes. And our MSIT management is totally relying on this data for their monthly report and monthly data to see the mobile trend and the enforcement trend. And what we are not using in Microsoft in Exchange Server Connector is we are not enforcing Exchange policies in MSIT. The reason is we don't have a business requirement as well as we are not given the write access. We have only the read access for the Exchange servers to get this data. And also you can also wipe and reload mobile devices in application catalog, which Dharmendra showed you. In application catalog, the devices will be shown to the users based on their mobile device type, and they can select and then do a wipe. Since we don't have the right access on Exchange, this feature is not used in Microsoft IT. I'm going to show some reports that are part of Exchange Connector. This is one of the main reports that's used for Exchange Connector, which shows all the different types of platforms of mobile devices that are being used and connected in Microsoft IT. Okay. And as you can see, there are many devices, different cross-platform devices that you can see in the report.
Karthik, you don't have number for iPhones?
No.
That's a fact.
That's kind of mass, no. Okay. Right. This report is also having the level. You can also drill down to this report and see to the level of different types of device types, models, and the count of devices and the usernames. So it can give a clear picture of how many devices and how many different types of devices are being used in your environment. Also, when it comes to deployment, like Chitanshu mentioned, we have been doing migration and upgrade of clients in our hierarchy, but it's always important for us to understand how our upgrade is going on. So Config Manager has very rich set of reports, and we have to leverage the data and then do some history and some kind of a trending. We did this through collecting the data on a daily basis and then graph them or plot them through in a dashboard format and then show this to the management, as well as it helped us to find out how our upgrade is going on, as well as take some actions proactively and also resolve some environmental issues. This is also another report that we developed to find out the client health on a daily basis and take actions accordingly. And this has resolved a lot of environmental and operational issues too. And with that, I'm going to invite Chitanshu to talk about the benefits and the lessons learned out of it.
Thank you, Karthik. So I like the last section of this session because there we end the session. So that's my favorite part. A lot of folks will be interested, like, what is saving? That's your manager or your CIO will be interested. Okay, we deploy Configuration Manager 2012. Do we save anything? Means there are a lot of cool features. There's an architecture change. So let's talk about that. What is the cost saving we anticipate after deploying the Configuration Manager 2012? So based on our, like, application management, Dharminder talk about the application catalog. And also, if you understand there's an app model, there's a self-service portal, all these things, we are going to retire our custom solution for packaging and testing team, which is like your wrapper base, and we are going to use the app model, which is going to significantly reduce our maintenance cost for that software which we have custom for packaging testing. The second cost we are going to save in the, like I mentioned there, we did not have a remote SQL server for CAS. It is on the same box. We reduce one server. We reduce the LSV side. Overall, if you have less number of servers, less number of operation issues and backup cost as well. So overall, we anticipate 500,000 saving for next 2 years, so based on the yearly and monthly cost. So that's our cost anticipation on that one. The second benefit I will talk about is empowered end user. Basically, it's like what we are not putting user in the center. Now with this, user have on the end center point, and they can go and self-service. And what we have seen with the user, like Karthik shown the screenshot where user can define the service window, maintenance window, with what would help us, like the NSAT, what MSIT was collecting from all the users has been improved. The third benefit I want to talk about, the client health. With the CCM eval, the new feature, our client health has been improved from 95% to 99%. That's a huge jump, and we are 99% client healthy in Configuration Manager 2012. So that's the biggest benefit for our team for managing this client and remediation. Now let's talk about the lessons learned. There are three sections I divided in lesson learned. The first thing I talk about the people part, which is most important thing in any, whether the technology or process, what we learned. I definitely encourage to have your training and communication to run through the help desk. When we are deploying, what happened, like, we forget to tell our help desk and tier two teams that we are upgrading those clients to 2012. And as part of client upgrade, in the past, when you do the client upgrade or distance, user doesn't notice. In this Configuration Manager 2012, they will see a software center. And when you click on the all program, they will see something new got installed. And they will be worried what this new software came from. And they will start calling help desk. And we got a call, and it was lesson learned that, hey, whenever you deploy the client, users should be aware of it, whether it's a centralized portal where this notification is there that, hey, we are upgrading from 2007 to 2012. It will reduce the help desk call if users are interested to know what is going on their PC. So that's one of the lessons learned. Create awareness, like as mentioned, software center, that how to use them, because once they see first-time users, we need to tell them that, hey, how to use this software center, and there's a service window defining. The other approach, I will say, we have an option for having the classic software distribution, but start using the app model and get the admins and the people who are doing the packaging testing and be aware of that, how to convert the package. There's a tool called Package Conversion, PCM. Use that one to convert, and that's what I would say the new approach we should follow as a lesson learned, that versus having the legacy approach of deploying. Define your roles between the teams. Like RBA gives a very good enriched features that you, as Dharminder shows, that you could be a packager, you see only your objects, use and see that how your teams are defined. So that's take some time to understand RBA and say that how you want to deploy that. So that's a kind of list of people. On the process side, I will say, do not follow the Configuration Manager 2007 rules. There are a lot of things change, site data, global data. So even the topology or architecture when you are designing, start from scratch. It will be much better results you will achieve. I will highly recommend that think differently or think that, hey, you are designing new architecture. It's a side-by-side migration. Don't think that I have this site, I will just do the same for 2012. That will be, I will say that that's a process you should think differently. There are a lot of enriched reporting in client health, and also when you are doing the Exchange connector, you have to think that all the devices, IDs, and resource ID in the same table, so just exclude those things. During migration, I will, as a process point of view, I mentioned the group policy and security group, if you remember. Find some ways that you don't end up with the having the higher version, which is Configuration Manager 2012 clients, to assign to 2007, because have some process. Otherwise, you will end up with orphan clients or unsupported client in an environment. Have some process built on that during the migration time, whether it's 3 months or few months, you don't end up with mixing the clients with 2012 going 2007, overlapping boundaries. So those are the some of the process you should think about before deployment. And there are a bunch of technology lesson learned. What we learned as one of the cost driver was a SQL backup. So in Configuration Manager 2007, the right way of taking the backup is run the Config Manager backup maintenance task. It will take the MDF and LDF file along with the site level information. What we found that in Configuration Manager 2012, if you just have a SQL backup, you can restore the entire site. You don't need any other thing. So what we found that as part of the SQL, if you, for example, if we have lost CAS one time and there's catastrophic failure, you just have a SQL backup, restore it, all done, that's it. So what we found that when you take a SQL backup, it takes a compression, and when that compression takes less space during the backup and you have a tape backup or anything going on, it has reduced the cost overall because you are not you can use the SQL compression too highly. So that is the one thing. Planning about the migration when you're planning from 2007 to 2012, like DP packages or objects, carefully understand that what objects you want to migrate or you want to create new. So that's one of the things in the technology part that it doesn't apply everything. Mobile devices, this is something I was talking earlier that Karthik mentioned that all the mobile devices get discovery from the Exchange server. What happens that when you start reporting, you might see, I have only 100,000 clients, why is this showing 150,000? Make sure that you exclude the device type which are mobile, because you don't want to count that for the different reporting. So we learned in our reporting that we started counting the mobile devices in general reporting, then we realized, oh, we have Exchange connected, those devices should be counted differently. You don't want to say client unhealthy or anything, those report, that's one thing. Also, apply appropriate mobile device synchronization threshold. Usually it is configured, we are running once in a month, right? So we run once in a month because it takes a lot of time to revise. You can sure, based on number of devices you are going to sync with Exchange server, appropriately you can select. We run once in a month. Be familiar with the SQL replication. This is one of the biggest change for the IT pros who are the Configuration Manager admin to change think differently that what this site and global data means in terms of day-to-day operation. In the past, we have inbox have these many files. These are all hardware inventory, so our hardware inventory will be not updated. In the site, when you are talking about the replication, you won't see that distribution. It's like more of the tables and views, and you have to find that, learn about the SQL replication. It's also not a native SQL replication. It's a custom-built Configuration Manager replication. So it's a different mindset. See, take some time or attend some session. There's tomorrow at 10, Saad is doing the session on detailed replication so that you can attend that one. Also, there is an out-of-box replication link analyzer. I will highly recommend use to that tool when you ever see any replication issue. It helps resolving as well as remediating the replication issue between site to site. So that's in the last thing. If you are planning in next 6 months or 1 year, probably it is a good time if you have not started using virtualization. What it will give you a benefit, you won't end up asking a lot of budget when you are deploying 2012. In our Configuration Manager 2007, we were already virtualized, so it was helped us in minimizing the new hardware need, because in virtualization you can very easily swap the roles and build new VMs. So that was a one benefit. There are a bunch of blogs available from our team, all the details. The second blog, the technical case study you can see, number two and number three, these are recently published. One of them came day before yesterday, and this case study talks about more detail what we talked about here. And it also takes step by step how we validated, how we tested the hierarchy, how we did the proof of concept. I will say download this case study when you are developing. So these are the good blogs where you can refer more details. With this, I will appreciate if you submit the eval, and thank you very much for joining this session. We are here for answering any question. Dharmendra, just reminded that folks who are going for the party tonight, don't forget that tag which you have got on the registration, because that is very important for entering the party. And enjoy the party. Thank you.